Everybody, I'm Dale and I'm an alcoholic. It is a little special kind of nervous, I guess, actually speaking under your own roof, you know what I mean? But it's good to be here and step up to the plate is kind of a, it's not the way it happened. But anyway, it's, you know, it's this home group is home for me in AA, and it's been a real special place to get sober. Many times, actually, I just never stayed sober long enough to do a whole lot around here, and it's been a different experience this time. Once I had the experience I had with alcohol that got me to a place of being willing to try some, open to trying some new things, you know. So anyway, I want to mention my sobriety date is the 31st of January, 2022. And, of course, Blue Ridge Speakers Group is my home group. I am sponsored. My sponsor spoke here actually not too long ago. We're in regular contact. We try to meet up once a week, stay current, you know. This guy knows pretty much about everything about me. And I'm glad to be completely honest. I don't have to be completely honest with everybody, but I found it's very helpful to be completely honest with somebody. And he's one of those folks that just made it so easy for me to get honest with him because he talked my language, you know, that sort of thing. And so, of course, this is my home group. On Thursday nights, this group also has another meeting. It's over at Hebron Lutheran, which is also here in Madison. And we do a step meeting and a tradition the last Thursday of the month. We meet on Thursdays at 7:30, and it's usually somewhere between a half a dozen and a dozen of us, but there's always room for more. So it's a real good meat and potatoes AA meeting, you know what I mean? And that's the stuff that I relate to, the stuff that I know I'm getting what I want these days, not just what I need, but what I want in AA. And so our speaker down with sickness. I guess it's a lot of that going around this time of year, we have a few of us that haven't spoken here at the home group, you know what I mean? And so by luck of the draw, we throw some names in the nut jar and pull one out, and I'm your nut this evening. So anyway, it's good to be here. It's good to see a lot of familiar faces. And like I say, it's not the first time I've spoke, but it's the first time I've spoke here. And it's a different kind of get it right kind of thing, because, you know, it's a lot of people I know, a lot of people I've seen in meetings here, and a lot of stuff that I share that I just want to, you know, it's not BS. You know what I mean? It is. My drunk and my sober is something special to me. It has become something special to me, especially when I found out through AA how to turn the worst part of my life into something of real value and give it back, so that somebody else might say, hey, yeah, you know, I did that too. Maybe I can get sober also, you know. So I think I needed a drink probably about 7 years before I ever had one. And there's a guy who's passed recently. His name is Bummy, and you know, in our steps, the 12 steps says having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, and so we talk about spirituality in here, and a lot of people have issues with spirituality or with God, or just don't even realize that they can have a relationship personal with a God of their understanding. And Bummy said it one way that really clicked with me. He said, if you're having a problem with spirituality, just throw the reality away. You know what I mean? And ask, what's your spirit like today? You know, and I was thinking about that. And I think as a child, I had a free spirit. You know, I don't remember. I had a faith that I didn't realize I had. I just believed without thinking about it that I was going to be taken care of. I don't ever remember worrying about whether or not I was going to have something to eat. I don't remember worrying as a kid if I was going to be out in the cold and not have shelter. I just had a blind faith about those things, and I just kind of lived life, and somewhere along the way, I started noticing things, and as far as it was probably like the first time I played organized sports, which was like 11 years old or something like that, little league baseball. And I remember clearly the first time I went out on the field and I noticed my cleats weren't like your cleats, you know what I mean? And then all of a sudden I started noticing my folks weren't like your folks, and my house wasn't like your house, and my clothes wasn't like your clothes. And I started becoming envious, or I started having a complex with myself, you know what I mean? So this just started going on, and I withdrew, or I just didn't know how to fit in. I didn't think I fit in because my stuff wasn't like your stuff, and so on and so forth. And by the time I was 15 years old, I was pretty wound up, self-involved, self-obsessed. Chameleon, didn't know how to be my own self. Just my sister used to call me mental boy, and I was definitely up in my head too much. And I just didn't know how to get along with family. I didn't know how to fit in with other people. I just didn't know how to function. But yet I didn't let you know that I didn't know how to function, and anyway, so at 15 years old, I was doing some work with my dad in the backyard, and we had a weird relationship too. I didn't know how to let him be my father, and he didn't know how, he just kind of let me go. You know what I'm saying? I just didn't know how to get close to him, and I think maybe he knew I needed to drink. And up across the back of a truck came a Miller Pony High Life, and I drank that down, and then I remember another one coming up. And I had a spiritual awakening. As far as I remember, I had an experience that was, I got just what I needed, and I didn't know I needed it. The way I say it was, the way I think about it is that this guy that was in my head talking to me for 15 years finally got to come out and have a conversation with you. You know what I mean? And then, once I found the drunk, I found a solution to what was going on with me. Shortly thereafter, the first year or so, I'd say, I had access to alcohol at 15 years old. I had an aunt that would get it for me. I had a dad who would keep plenty of it around, and it wasn't a problem to swipe a few here and there. I didn't have a problem getting a hold of alcohol. But the first year or so I drank, was probably like a bottle rocket, is the way I say it. I'm a quick drinker, phew, an explosion, and then hit the ground, pass out and puke for the first year or so. Every time I drank, that's what I did. It took me about a year to prime the pump, and I think people noticed right away too that I went to school with, the difference in me when I was drinking and when I wasn't drinking. You couldn't get two words out of me when I didn't have a drink in me. You couldn't shut me up when I was drinking. And hey, Andrew, could you mute? I don't mean to be distracted, but anyway, maybe he's there and he can hit the mute button. I'm not sure. But so I chased the drink. It made me feel good. It made me. It just gave me something that it gave me power. It gave me power. It gave me, it leveled the playing field for me. I got into trouble with drinking early on. I think I had two DUIs before I could take a legal drink. The third one shortly thereafter. And a fourth one I would get in the mid-90s, but I refused all the tests, all the field sobriety tests and all the blood test, and refused to sign the papers and said I refused. Anyway, I got in some trouble, and I popped into my first AA meeting probably in 1992. And as I said, my sobriety date's 2022, so it's 30 years. I would come in here with trouble. And AA works so good. I'd come to a few meetings and I would build up hope. I'd build up a little confidence in myself. My trouble would go away. And then I'd start drinking again. My drinking's like a lot of people I've heard stand up here and speak. It was fun. It was fun with trouble. And then it was trouble, And so at the beginning, it was just, whatever trouble I got into didn't outweigh the fun I was still having, And so in the 90s, and I'm going to brush through this. In the 90s, I ended up in detox 3 times. I also smoked a lot of cocaine in the 90s. And that took me on a that was like a rocket ship to the bottom real quick, and so I would burn my relationship to the ground, burn my money to the ground. I would have no hope really quickly, and I would go over to New Hope over in Stanton's, hang out for a week or so, and straighten up, eat right, start feeling okay. They'd send me back home, and I remember the first time I went over there, the when I was getting ready to leave. And they were saying, they were giving me all this stuff that I should do post release or whatever. I was like, I'm good, And the lady over there said, "Oh, we'll see you back." I said, "What do you mean seeing you back? I'm fixed, I'm going to detox, And she said, "No, most people we see over here 3 times, at least 3 times, if they make it 3 times." And sure enough, probably I think it was 92, 94, 96, something like that. I ended up back over there and detox. And but I think it was early 2000s, I put the cocaine down. I had enough. I got tired of spending all my money, and I just stopped. And I had managed to fall backwards into a good job somehow, and had purchased a house. And so I stayed at home then and drank. I didn't get in trouble on the road after that stuff. I didn't get in trouble with cocaine anymore. And I just sat at home, patted myself on the back. I'm sitting in my own house getting drunk, And so I spent a lot of time at the kitchen table. I had a setup there. It was refrigerator on the right, chair right here, TV in front, trash can over here. All I had to do was play rotate. I didn't move a whole lot. And had 2 children, and I remember after I built the house that we went to Costco and bought this huge playpen or what playground thing, jungle gym or whatever you want to call it, and we set it right out in the backyard there, where I could see from the kitchen window, keep an eye on the kids. I didn't have to go outside and play with them, just turn them loose out there, and you could look out the window and keep an eye on them or whatever. But anyway, so I obviously those 2 kids came from a marriage that I burnt to the ground. I'm definitely an alcoholic who cannot form a true partnership with another human being, because you can't come in between me and my drinking. Can't come in between me and me. It's too much me. I can't get involved with you, and that's been a story of my life for the longest time, is the inability to form a true partnership with another human being. And so again, through this whole time, whenever the heat got on, whenever the pressure was enough, I'd come into AA. And a lot of y'all in here know it. You've seen me around for a long time, and I used to hear, "You think you got it this time, Dale? You think you got it? You think you got it this?" I'd stay sober 3 months, man. I was doing good, and then I'd be gone again. I still, in the back of my mind, I could not get rid of the idea that somehow someday I could drink. I mean, drinking was the greatest experience I'd ever had, even though it was killing me. It was ruining my life. It was ruining everybody around me. I refused to want to see that alcohol was the problem, and that my relationship with alcohol, that what alcohol was doing for me, was more important than to anything that anybody else said they could do for me. You know what I mean? And I just wasn't willing to give it up. And it gave me the feeling of euphoria. It gave me the feeling of completeness. You know, it gave me the feeling of being whole. And whenever I didn't have it, I felt like something was missing, you know. And so nothing stood in the way of me in a dream. I mean, it was, you know, it was, there was no parent, no wife, no kid, no job, no money, no anything when it came in between the decision of what either that or this. It was always the drink, you know what I mean? Eventually, I might straighten up for a little bit and make you feel important, you know, or make my job feel like they mattered to me, or make my parents, you know what I mean? I put on a show for a little while, and then it was just back. We build things up and then just burn them to the ground again, you know. And that's really my story. I would build up hope. I would build up a life. I would build up dreams. I would have things looking good, and then pick up the drink and then just burn it to the ground, you know. And always having that feeling of, you know, after that would happen, of I'm always in the same spot. You know, always end up in the same spot. I'm never going to be a success, or I'm not successful. I just always had that feeling of like I'm always going to be a loser, you know. I tried to embrace it, you know. I tried to embrace being a drunk, actually. But I mean, I just. After a while, you get tired. You know what I mean? You just get tired, and alcohol beat me down. So I'd have to quit for periods of time. You know what I mean? And I could quit, and I'd come in, and in the back of my mind, there it was again. You know, sometimes I would think I'd be done forever, and then all of a sudden, the thought of a drink would be there, and I didn't have the power to not take it. Once it got on me like that, you know what I mean? The obsession got on me. I was going to take a drink sooner or later. It was just a matter of time. So my first, I guess, real experience with AA, even though I've been coming around for probably 20 years before I really had an experience with AA, was in 2010. And the lady that who's here tonight, Dana's here tonight, and ended up getting married. But before that, through some circumstances, there was a split, and I went away to Williamsburg place, and came out of there, and ended up hooking up with Sam, and we went through the book, went through the steps the first time, and you know, it's a funny thing. Well, it's not a funny thing, but this weekend, 10 years ago, I had been sober for the longest time I'd ever been sober in this stretch. You know, it's like 2 years and 9 months sober. I've never been sober that long. And actually, this weekend, I'm about 2 years, 9 months sober again. And you know, in September of 2014, and I'm getting ahead a little bit, but anyway, Sam and I got together, and we started working the steps, and I started doing the things that I was asked to do in here. You know, I made an honest inventory, you know, shared openly and honestly as I could with another human being. Was willing and wanted to change and become a different person and have God take me better things. And we made a 8-step list, and started going around making amends. You know, during that period, I'd got a notice from the IRS. You know, I was into them and cheated them out about 40 grand. And, you know, I had just a long laundry list of folks that I needed to make amends to. And so we went through that stuff, cleaned up the mess with the IRS, cleaned up a lot of broken relationships from my high school years, people I'd run over and treated bad, and I mean, you know, things were as good as they'd been anyway. You know what I mean? I was a member of this home group. During that period of time, Dana and I got married, and we, you know, started making a home. And somewhere along that way, I remember starting to have an inside feeling of when am I going to get mine? You know, I started, I guess, that self-will, selfish thing started taking over on me again, you know, and like I went out and bought a vehicle without talking to her about it. You know, all these little selfish things I started doing, it started to build up, and I wasn't being appreciated. You know, here I am finally sober, what everybody wanted, and, you know, all this little stuff. And then it was September 2014, and I remember there was a disagreement, and that reservation to drink just snapped me, and I picked up in 2014, and I'm telling you, it's from then to my sobriety date, it has been an extreme example of self will run riot. You know, Daniel was well sober almost 16 years now almost, and you know, so it was I had an example of AA in my house, and someone who you know, showed me how to stay sober no matter what. And trust me, I know, I've seen somebody stay sober no matter what, because I put them through no matter what, you know what I mean? And this is when I picked up a drink this time, it was probably some of the most destructive, isolating, hopeless desperation of drinking that I knew was even possible, you know. First time I ran away from home, I was 14 years old. I don't even remember why I rode or ran away from home that time. I just remember hopping on a bike after my folks went to bed, rode from Leon to Scrabble, to some preacher's house there. But anyway, but this time when I picked up in 2014, I started running away from home again, you know. And the first time I picked up a drink, I was working on the railroad, and I was out of town during the week, and I'd come home on the weekends. And when I started drinking, I just wouldn't come home on the weekends, you know. I'd stay in a hotel. And first time was about 6 weeks or something like that. And I'd come up out of my hole. I'd say I'm sorry. I'd come back to AA. 2 or 3 months, I'd be back to drinking again. So between 2014 and 2020, I ran away from home five times is a good number. And I got a local spot over in Scottsville on the railroad, and when the drink would get on and I was coming off of being on the road, I found a place over there in Nelson County, and I rented a place from that guy, stayed drunk in his little cabin he had up there in Nelson County. Went to a place called the Highlands for about 6 months. I remember coming home on the day after Thanksgiving that year, you know, and seeing at the time we were staying different places. I would come home on the weekends, and Dana would go to another place, and just so happened I thought she wouldn't be there, but she was, you know. And the truth hit me every time. I couldn't look in her eyes every time I come off a drunk. You know, I would leave my wife, I would leave my home, I would leave my animals, I would leave my kids' responsibilities, I would leave everything to go get drunk. And so I would be sober for a little while, promise to do better, promise I'm going to do better, you know, and it wasn't done. And I would start having a drink, and I couldn't tell anybody. I would send these guys a message on a Saturday. I'm out. I'd be here with them for a little while, and then I'd be like, I'm out. I gotta get drunk. I gotta get drunk. I mean, it was no. I don't even know how to explain it. I just had to. When King Alcohol calls, I had to answer the call. And it would when it got on me, I had to go. And so I the next couple of times I would leave for a year at a time. 2017, I took off up to Dillon. A guy that I worked with had a cabin in the woods up there, you know what I mean? And hadn't been lived in for a couple of years. And so after Dana went to work one morning, I piled a mattress and a couple of chairs on the back of the truck, and I took off. She got home and wasn't nobody there, stayed up there for about a year, and just did what I did. I mean, I when this this is when I started living off of booze, sliced salt pork, and chicken noodle soup, cans of chicken noodle soup. I would eat, and I was drinking Milwaukee's Best Ice, and I would always have a bottle of bourbon, and usually some pot. That was my cocktail. Beer, bong head shot, and in between beers, I would grab a pull off the bourbon bottle and yell at the ceiling like a crazy fool, and just drink till I passed out. I couldn't stand myself if I didn't pass out. On the weekends when I would be there, and this would happen, and when I wasn't working, I would sit, get up in the morning, I'd stare out the window. It'd be a beautiful day. I'd be terrified. Man, I'd be standing out there just so terrified, like I didn't deserve to even go outside and breathe the fresh air. I was so riddled with guilt and shame, and I was horrified that somebody was going to come and take all this away from me. Even though I was holding myself prisoner, it was my own. it was my pot of gold. It was my own little self-induced paradise. Even though as crazy as it seemed, it was just that miserable paradise kind of thing that I think alcoholics understand. But I mean, it's nothing like being alone in your own misery drunk, and there's no feeling like it. And so when I came to after about a year out of that cabin, I went to a meeting over in Dillon on Tuesday night. And after that meeting, a guy came up to me and he said, "Hey, my name's Al." He said, "I help guys take the steps." And that guy's still my sponsor today. Little did I know that whole year I was over there drunk in the cabin, I was only about a mile from a guy who showed me a new way of life. You know what I mean? Who would really open me up to being willing to try something, to have a new experience, and to really enjoy being sober. I didn't get sober then, of course. I had to go again another time. I had to go. I had to go in 2019, and I found a little trailer over there in Buckingham. And I had to cut the trees out of the way to get in the front door, and flush the kerosene out of the toilets and clean up all the mouse droppings that were in the place. But once again, I had ran away to paradise. When alcohol called, I had to go. Again, a year over there, I stayed in touch with Al. Stayed in touch with a lot of people that I knew in AA. And after coming out of that trip, in 2020, I was going between the chair and the refrigerator for another beer. I lost my balance, blew my knee out, bounced my head off the floor, laid there for a little while. And when I came to, of course, I finished getting drunk, and then I called my sponsor up like the next day, and I called Dana, and I was like, "I'm sorry, I'm gonna get sober," and this and that, and I didn't get sober. It was like another couple of days, but anyway, I called Al up, hey, and this then I found out there weren't any meetings going on because COVID was happening. And as miserable as I felt, the first thing that came to my mind was, what a great excuse to not have to get sober. You know what I mean? There's no meetings. And but come to find out, he was doing this thing from Zoom, and he only lived again about a couple miles from where I was hiding out over there. And so I started going over to his house and doing these Zoom meetings. And when I went over there this time, he told me a couple of things that really sunk in with me. I knew a lot of AA history. I knew a lot about the Big Book. As a matter of fact, I would use it against my wife all the time. Anytime she would try to talk about my drinking, I would use the Big Book in defense of my drinking. And anyway, when I went over to see Al this time, he said, "I mean, I did the deal when I was in here, so I couldn't stay any longer, you know." And he said, "Dale," he said, "every AA community needs their Ebby." And that hit me. I knew then that Al didn't think I was going to stay sober. You know what I mean? Ebby didn't stay sober, but he helped a lot of drunks when he was sober, you know. And then he said, "You have no spiritual defense against the first drink. You're a real alcoholic. You're going to get drunk again. These steps are designed to unblock you from a power that can be a defense against first drink." And I never put it into that perspective before, you know. And so it wouldn't be the last time I got drunk. Dana and I had a divorce, and 2 days after the divorce, I've been sober for 16 months at the time, and I'd been wanting to drink for a good little while, you know. And when I got the notice that the divorce was final, I got drunk 2 days later, and the idea was I was just going to stay drunk for a few weeks till Dana found her place, and then I would straighten up. And I didn't have any control over how long I stayed drunk. You know, I could not say I was going to stay drunk for 2 weeks, 2 days, 2 years, or nothing. When I took the drink took me. That's the way it was. You know what I mean? And I stayed drunk for 5 months. I had lost all control of my digestive system. You know what I mean? If I burped, it could be disaster. You know, it was just, there was no regulation on anything that was going on anywhere. I would have the alcohol would pour out of my body from the back of my head to the back of my knees on a daily basis. I could be up for 30 minutes and I'd be drenching and soaking wet. I was spilling booze all over the house. Every two or three drinks I'd spill on the floor. And it was just disgusting. But I could still get it. You know what I mean? I could still get that feeling I was looking for from drinking. I hear a lot of people say drinking stopped working, and it didn't. I could still get there. You know what I mean? I could still get that few minutes of relief, a few minutes of feeling euphoric. But it would only last for a few minutes or for 30 minutes. It would be a fight to get there. I would look at that drink sitting on the table, and my stomach would be hot coals burning in my stomach. And I remember saying, "Ooh, if I can just choke two or three of you down, I'm on my way." You know what I mean? And that's the kind of drinking it was. And so I was in a hopeless condition, but I didn't know what else to do. I didn't know what else to do other than drink. I was drinking when I didn't want to drink, and I was I was just doing whatever alcohol told me to do. You know what I mean? And so I had. There were some people say a lot of people stayed in touch with me while I was on this drunk, and I was talking to one of those folks one evening. I was drunk, and I was saying, you know, I said, "Hey, I can't go a day without drinking. I drink when I don't want to drink. As a matter of fact, some part of me feels like, you know what, I'm just going to be a drunk. This getting sober and getting drunk, getting sober and getting drunk is just too, it's too much." And they said, "Well, Dale, that's what powerlessness is." And I don't know why, but when it was said, I had an experience. I had a moment of truth experience, and if I try to explain it, I'd sell it short. All I can remember feeling like was a feeling of falling into a deep, dark pit. When that truth hit me in the gut, it went past my head and it hit me right in the chest, you know, and I knew I knew I was going to die drunk, but there was part of me, I guess, that still didn't want to die. And I think God grabbed a hold of that part that night, you know what I mean? And pulled me out of that cycle of drinking again. I think I always had to have, looking back, I believe there was always some sort of experience that broke the cycle of my drinking. But I know today that that experience won't keep me sober. That experience may get me into AA, but it won't keep me in AA, you know? And so, I called my sponsor back up. I called my home group back up. I kind of started coming back to AA. And when I went back to Al, I said, you know, Al, we're going to start doing the steps again. And he said, Dale, he said, let's just try to stay sober for a while. And that's, you know, we went through the steps originally, went through the tradition, started going through the concepts when I got drunk the last time. And he said, let's just try to stay sober for a while. And that's what we've been doing for the last 2.5 years, you know, just staying current, staying and trying to stay sober for a while. I got, back involved in the home group. And the biggest part and the difference today is somewhere along this period of time, I realized that I was a free man, you know, and I was grateful for it. I had been given an absolute release from drinking. That there wasn't anything standing in between me and a relationship with God. There wasn't anything standing in between me and a relationship with AA. And I was free to be as much in AA as I wanted to, or I was free to be as much out of AA as I wanted to. And here's where I started getting life again. You know what I mean? Here's what started to fill me up, again. And, so I just got right back into AA. I've gotten so involved in service, involved in with my sponsor and sponsorship. There's a little group. It can be questionable sometimes if it's an AA meeting, but it's a middle of the day meeting. It's in Orange, and that group has become really special to me. Then so I'm the alternate GSR here for this group now. I never stayed sober long enough. You know, I've been around here 30 years. I never stayed sober long enough to be a representative for a group. And I got to go with Theo this past spring down to the assembly, the state assembly. One of those, that's an experience I can tell you that it's worth having. It really showed me the need to get involved. There's a desire to get involved, really. I don't know, shortly in, maybe this is July, will be the second year that Billy mentored me into finding the speakers for this meeting on Sunday night. And that's been just opened up a huge network of folks and a huge network of alcoholics that you can go to in a pinch, you know what I mean, and reach out to, or vice versa. It's just opened up an avenue of service that gives me the feeling I was looking for 3 or 4 beers in, you know, when I got that release from whatever the hell was going on that day. When you live a life like I do, in secret, and lie and cheat and steal, there's a whole lot of care and boredom and worry that needs to be relieved. And alcohol, I'll say this, I say alcohol works perfectly on alcoholism. I think it does exactly what it's supposed to do. Problem is, I can't stop drinking once I get to do a dose I need, you know what I mean? I can't stop, but just keep on drinking past the solution. And so anyway, it's this home group means so much. We do a lot of things together here, you know what I mean? We get together, of course, before the meeting, you know, and we when you go to the district meeting down here every third Thursday, you're going to see probably about 4 of us in the district meeting, you know. And we're interested in our in our community of Alcoholics Anonymous care about, I think, about the integrity, the importance, and the true value of Alcoholics Anonymous, and how important it is to maintain the language of the heart. And it was a great experience this summer. Some of you came and got to be a part of the well, one of the groups I went to early on, Rapid Ann group, who meets out in the graveyard. I found out there's a difference between a graveyard and a cemetery. I found that out this year. A graveyard has a church attached to it. I didn't know that. But anyway, they meet in the graveyard Memorial Day through Labor Day, and decided to have hot dog Tuesdays, you know, and I got an opportunity to do service down there, flipping hot dogs for a group that I love. You know what I mean? And I've seen a lot of people come in there and get sober. A lot of people have their first experiences with AA down in Rapidan. You know what I mean? It's a lot of history down there. And so that just finished up. Anyway, stay tuned next year. Maybe we'll do it again. And activities, the Labor Day, the Memorial Day picnic, the Alcathon, and whatever other activities that we have in our district, that spot had come open. And with a little friendly nudge from some folks in my home group, now the activities chair for District 39. And unfortunately, due to sickness, I missed the Labor Day picnic, but I hear it was great. And except for the cheese, I forgot the cheese for the hamburgers, and much apologies for that. But anyway, so it's this stuff that is keeping me involved. It's this stuff that's a guide of my understanding in Alcoholics Anonymous. Anything is possible in here. For a couple of years, Dan and I weren't in the same room together. You know what I mean? In AA. And over the past 6, 8 months, maybe something like that, sober living and good sponsorship on both ends, I believe, and a lot of attendance at AA meetings and doing service and things like that. And there's been an opportunity for us to start a conversation and continue that conversation and really develop a relationship that we hadn't had in 20 years. You know, this is a lady who saw the brunt of my alcoholism. And actually, we had a beautiful dinner Friday night, you know, a nice little place at Tommy in Fredericksburg. I would highly recommend it. And we didn't throw anything at each other, you know what I'm saying? Not even insults. And it's just good, you know, it's good to be free. And I thought I could only get that freedom from drinking. That's what it seemed to give me when I first experienced it, and even when I experienced it at the end, it seemed to give me a sense of freedom. But I know today it was escape, you know. And the difference between escape and freedom is escape, and I'm always looking over my shoulder, man. You know what I mean? Something, the next shoe's about to drop. I got a drink to run. I'm a runner. You know, that's a quality I haven't let go of. I'm still a runner. I still don't like you to get too close to my emotions. You know, my first instinct is to run from trouble. My first instinct is to run from intimacy, or cover up, or act as if, or put on a front. As our books say, more than most people, alcoholics live a double life, you know, and that's been my case for sure. And today, more and more, not completely, but more and more, I'm becoming a one person. The person that you see is more and more becoming the person that I am. Not completely, but it's getting there. You know what I mean? A work in progress. And I'll just say that I want to say that I'm glad I was taken through the steps out of the big book. Our group on Thursday nights, we do a step in tradition study. And a lot of times we'll go to the 12 and 12. It's just a better read for a group. And I'm getting the value I think that was intended out of the 12 and 12. My sponsor showed me in the forward to the 12 and 12. It talks about the book Alcoholics Anonymous being our basic text. And in the forward, it says, and it still is our basic text. It's the basic instructions of how to take the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And then it says this current volume, the 12 and 12, is meant to broaden and deepen our understanding of the steps. And boy, has it. You know what I mean? It has really opened up new doors in my experience with the steps, my understanding of the steps. And as a matter of fact, this past week, we were in the eighth step out of the 12 and 12. And it's definitely not the first time I read it. I think sometimes when we see things, when we are open to see them, are unblocked and we can see it. You know what I'm saying? And there was a part in there that says, you know, we're making a list of the people we'd harm, becoming willing to make amends to them all. And it says, no area of investigation could yield greater rewards than this one. That, you know, by searching through our list, people we had harmed, that, you know, we could, and I'm going to screw it up, but basically it says that through this investigation, we could get beyond the things that are superficially wrong with us and get down to basic issues that have shaped us from a young age and have been the way we treated people our entire lives. And I was like, wow, that looks like another inventory to me. And they're in the eighth step, you know what I'm saying? And I've never seen that before. And I know that I called my sponsor up while I shot him a text. I said, hey, man, this thing on page 80, it looks like another inventory to me. Maybe a deeper. And, you know, I have some issues. I have, you know, as a young guy, my innocence was taken from me as a 7 or 8 year old. You know what I'm saying? And I'm not one to stand up here and say trauma made me a victim. I know from doing the steps and doing inventory and stuff like that, that what happened to me at 8 years old may not have been my fault. But if I'm still treating people that way 40 years later, it is my fault, you know, and that's where I take responsibility for it. And so I'm anxious and also a little bit hesitant to look into this thing. I think that if the idea is to grow an understanding and effectiveness, that I'm open to it. You know, I'm open to see what's down there. And I know that there's been consistent behavior on my part in regards to other people. It says, you know, that since troubled relations with other people has always been the cause of our woes and even our alcoholism. This is why I drink, because I can't get along with you. Or I drink to get along with you. You know what I mean? It's all about relationships with other people. And one thing I'll say is today I have learned the meaning of continue. Our 10th step says, you know, it's continue like four times in the first paragraph, you know, continue to take inventory, to continue to watch out for fear, continue to set right any wrongs as they come up, continue to grow in understanding and effectiveness. And I never had any continue in my AA program, you know what I mean? I would usually get to some amends. I'd try to make things right at home and either they'd be right and I'd get drunk. Or I think I couldn't make it right. It was always going to be this way. And then I'd get drunk on that. You know what I mean? The ninth step was a finish line. It was a completion. I didn't realize it, but I can see today that that's what I was doing. So I know today that I want to continue. You know, I want to continue. I know it's one day at a time around here. We get a daily reprieve. And I haven't fought a drink off for a long time. You know, that's a promise of the 10th step, that we quit fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. And I have not fought the idea of getting drunk for a long time. It's been the relief that's provided in here. I go to bed at night praying to God that he reminds me in the morning to reach out for some help, because I'm a forgetter. You let me go to sleep and I'll forget what it is I'm supposed to do in the morning. You know, I can be halfway through the day and forget that I didn't start my day off right. So I ask for that help at night. And through practice, daily practice, I think, usually most of the time, as soon as I wake up, you know, I say, Father, I offer myself to you today. You know what I mean? And do with me what you will. And relieve me of the bondage of self, because I know I'm wrapped up in it. You know, I'm wrapped up in it. And And so surrender has been the big difference for me. You know, it's been the big difference. I think that's what happened to me in 2022, is I had a surrender. And I don't know how to explain it. I think if you've experienced it, I don't think you need me to explain it. And if you haven't experienced it, I don't think my explanation is going to do it any good. You know what I mean? It's an individual experience with that. With that, our individual experience to the bottom with drinking, and then our individual experience, you know, out of the bottle through Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm just here to say I'm so appreciative of the chances that God has afforded me to live. So many times I could have drank myself to death, and for some reason or other, it didn't see fit to let me go, you know. The people that have stayed in my life when they could have easily walked away from me for the way that I've treated them. All these things I believe are precious gifts. Sometimes I don't even know the value of them until I get the opportunity to talk about it, you know, because I'm not a depth guy. I'm an on the surface guy. And most of the time that's the guy you're going to see, you know what I mean? I don't. And so I really think that this opportunity serves today really has done something for me. I hope it's done something for you, but it gives me a new perspective and a new, just a new sense of belonging, a new sense of gratitude for a life that's available. I just wasn't willing to, I didn't even think I deserved it. I didn't think it was possible. You know what? I look forward to seeing all of you every week, and I think that's all I got this evening. Thanks for being here.